Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to the Iron Age Marketing Podcast. I'm Nikki P. here with my good friend, Mr. Remzo Martinez, who is an author twice over at this point.
What up, what up?
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your two books? Start things off that way. Or we could start it off with, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'll do both. My first two books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble in both print and digital. My first one is Stay Away from the Libertarians, which came out in 2018. It was a millennial's look at the post-Ron Paul libertarian movement. If you think it sounds dry and dull, I promise you there are some funny laughs in there, and you get a little bit of history as well if you're, you know, just looking into libertarianism, or whether you like all that libertarian baseball, inside baseball stuff. And then in 2019, I came out with my first historical fiction. It's also a dark comedy novel called How to Succeed in Politics and Other Forms of Devil Worship. It combines the politics of today while looking at the life and times of Governor George Wallace. So if you think it's wild, if you're into Quentin Tarantino and that type of stuff, this is definitely a type of book for you. You're going to dig it. Other than that, you know, I've been a digital marketing and advertising professional for going on 5 years now. Originally, I started off trying to get into politics, primarily doing, campaign work. I wanted to be a policy wonk and push white papers. But overall, I was like, you know, I got to find a way to get my foot in the door of things. So as I was starting to, you know, blog and do podcasts and other things, people started looking at what I was doing and they're like, can you do a little bit of that social media stuff for me? Can you do a little bit of that graphic design? So after finishing from college with a political science degree, quickly I went on to YTU. And, you know, for those of you who don't know what that means, it's YouTube University. I realized that my degree really wasn't helping me. But in terms of content marketing and everything else, I was already getting a crash course in how to do it through on-the-job training, lots of internships, lots of, you know, low-paying clients and stuff, just so that I could build up a portfolio. And from there, I really got into things as a copywriter. So copywriting is the art of writing sales copy, writing, generic copy needed, you know, for websites and content and everything that, you know, is basically supposed to drive a conversion experience for a customer or client. So from there, social media also played a big role in that. I'm managing the accounts for dozens of people, campaigns, small businesses, what have you. And then in 2019, I had a great opportunity to become the social media coordinator for the Washington Times. At the moment, the Times was having a bit of a renaissance period after the 2016 election, but they weren't really capturing it. They didn't really know how to find what some people would call like their next generation readership, which is, you know, not the current people that are buying the print newspaper. If you lived in Maryland, DC, or Virginia, how are we getting young people? How are we getting people to want to share our content, which is good, instead of somebody else's content, which might not be as good? How do we fight for that space? So I went in and, we went ahead and just completely deluged the opinion section, primarily because that was where we were finding a lot of people. We were trying to find new writers. I went ahead and helped jumpstart their Young Voices column, which lasted from 2019 until early 2022. That was a big boost there. I went ahead and helped bring the Washington Times Instagram from about 2,000 followers to 27,000 followers when I left. My big goal was to compete against the Washington Examiner. And I think since then, after copying my model, well, keeping it going, that is, they've been able to reach, you know, 60,000 plus people. I take credit for that. It was me. And, they were smart enough to just keep it going. And, it was a lot of influencer marketing back when influencer marketing was a bit more organic and not everyone wanted to get paid $50 for a tweet at minimum. So, that basically gave me a lot of experience doing a lot of different things. I had to think on my feet. Like most marketers, I was given a budget of $0 for everything I did. And, you know, ultimately I was scrappy, hungry, and nimble. That was what a boss of mine had told me to always keep in mind a few years ago working in DC as an intern. So that Washington Times experience was phenomenal. It really helped grow my presence, not just in the media space, but in the digital marketing space. From there, I was offered a job as the outreach director for Parler. We went ahead and helped, you know, Parler deal with things going from the summer of 2020 through the 2020 election. Around the time that I left, I was primarily working with influencers and dealing with a lot of the media spins from there. And then, you know, I jumped over into the nonprofit space a year prior. You know, nonprofits, when it comes to their marketing needs, you know, they have a lot, but they don't have a lot to necessarily give you to work with. So, you know, I helped launch a podcast. I helped bring in influencers for that. You know, had to figure out, you know, what automation tools do we need to make our lives easier? And then it was a lot of content in terms of, you know, podcasts, films, articles, that type of stuff. We went ahead and tripled their website traffic, you know, compared to last like 5 years of traffic. We went ahead and gave them 10 years of progress on Facebook in terms of follower reach within the first year I was there. And then, you know, now I'm essentially working my dream job. I work for a, you know, for an online marketing syndicate that manages, you know, about half a dozen and owned and operated properties ranging from politics to comic books to sports to entertainment to finance, all this other stuff. And I basically get to take all the things I've learned across, you know, my entire time as a digital marketer. And, you know, I get to do it all: email marketing, social media marketing, content marketing, you know, advertising, you know, advertisement creation, you know, working with third party partners and stuff like that. Like, it's a lot of work. There's never a day where I don't have something to do, but I absolutely love it because I get to take the passion of a content creator and I get to play with so many different tools and work with so many people who are way smarter than me. You know, this is a career that, you know, 15 years ago didn't necessarily exist, but within, you know, the past half decade, my parents used to go from, "I have no clue what you're doing. How are you going to make money?" to, "Can you teach me a little bit about what you're doing? Because I have a friend that needs help and he's willing to pay." So, you know, it's been a wild journey. I've had a lot of ups and downs in my career, but, you know, I absolutely love it. And I always tell people, it's like, you know, there was a quote from the show Mad Men, which kind of motivated me because I thought I'd be working in office with a whole bunch of, you know, Christina Hendricks types. Right. And it was, you know, of all the professions in the world, marketers are the most useless one. And I'm like, you know, maybe to a degree, I understand that if you're talking about, like, you know, road workers and meat packers and the people that help day to day life continue. But at the end of the day, everyone wants to buy something, but not everyone wants to be sold. I help connect, you know, business owners and entrepreneurs and really awesome, talented, smart people who have something that could benefit the lives of others. And I help connect them. And I love that.
Well, for me, it's like marketing can be the most evil or the most useful thing in the world. Because if you have the cure for cancer, it doesn't do anybody any good if no one knows about it. You know, so it really depends on what you're trying to sell. How do you think that, like, your marketing background has affected your ability to release your books?
You know, it was kind of funny because when I was still in DC thinking that, you know, I call it the evil triangle. So if you fail in politics, you go to media. And if you fail in media, you go to organized crime. And then if you succeed at organized crime, you go into politics. And if you really succeed in politics, the next step is media. And then when you fail at media, you go back to organized crime. So it's, you know, it's always funny how that kind of works if you look at the careers and, you know, decisions of certain bad actors in DC and New York and Los Angeles. But, you know, I was coming out with what I would call a generic resume. Now, I had time in the Army, which helped, but, you know, there's a dime a dozen people with college degrees who were applying for jobs. There's millions of political science folks, you know, that are constantly fighting each other. And I wasn't really standing out. So what I really began to notice was that, you know, like, I have nothing that really shows that this person is exceptional, other than the fact that I was gaining an audience and I was building a reputation through my podcast at the time, Remzo Republic, which was rebranded as the Remzo Martinez Experience. You can still find that online, where I was basically trying to be kind of like, you know, the punk rock political news podcast of the South. That's really what I was kind of doing. And by building that, people were like, you know, this kid is kind of creating, as a professor of mine once said, you know, a media fiefdom himself. I was never like an A-tier influencer, but I was getting noticed, especially in DC and Northern Virginia, where a lot of that concentrated, you know, wealth, power, and influence is. So around the time that I'm thinking, you know, should I write a book? My parents are pushing me towards grad school. A lot of people are also pushing me towards grad school. And for anyone that knows me, you understand that I hate school. So I was like, I'll write a book, to which, to my parents' dismay, they were like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. Well, I went ahead and self-published that book because publishers, and I don't say this to disagree with them. I think what they said helped me. And I also think what they said was in their better interest at the time. But here I am writing a nonfiction, you know, political comedy about a group of very unlikable people during a very tumultuous time in American politics. That's right, talking about libertarians. And I realized that from that, no one was going to give me a chance. So very quickly, I'm like, you know, If no one's going to give me the opportunities I want, the only option I have is to create them. And, you know, there will always be a need for somebody to go flip burgers or something. I can go find something else later. I was a mall cop. I worked at GameStop throughout all this. Like, you know, I'm not incapable of working, but I really didn't want to do that. I had a very limited time window of when I thought my parents were going to kick me out. And I'm like, I better do something amazing. So I took on a few jobs. I went ahead and financed, you know, the self-publishing of my book, from editing to cover to promotions and everything. And then by the time the book came out, it was on the bestseller list on Amazon. Ben Shapiro, Daily Wire, went ahead and endorsed it. A bunch of other folks. I had a great PR agent at the time. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was like, people thought it's like, oh, he's writing a book. Then it was, shit, he wrote the book. Then it was, oh my gosh, the book is a bestseller and he's being invited to go, you know, go to Las Vegas to go speak at Freedom Fest. I'm being invited all over, say, Virginia to sell copies and do autographs and photos, talk about my book and stuff like that. I did a giant radio run at that point, going on radio stations all throughout, you know, the Midwest and the Southeast. And I mean, it was absolutely crazy. And that's where, you know, people start paying attention. At that point, I'm like, well, what do you do after you write your first book? You write your second book. Kept doing all of that, kept going the podcast and everything, wrote the second book. And then around the time that was coming out, COVID happened. But luckily, I was already at the Washington Times. So what writing a book did was, you know, I call it basically like boasting about running an ultra marathon if you're a thinker, because what writing a book does is it shows a massive amount of dedication. It shows that you're a subject matter expert in the given area that you're talking about. But what you also do is you end up gaining so many other skills, because I would say I've made more money as a result of the book than I ever did because of the books, because of the opportunities that gave me. Because my second book was completely crowdfunded as well. I had a campaign on Indiegogo. I completely funded the book's production that way after I had finished it. And, you know, people have a hard time raising money. So here I am, wrote the book, marketed the book, fundraised for the book, had to fulfill all the sales orders myself, continued to do that. And at the same time, working a job, running all these other things I was doing, you know, people take notice of that. So it was a big chance. And, you know, did I write the best book on libertarianism ever? No, the best book about libertarianism ever will always be Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Their Stuff by Matt Kibbe.
I was actually going to say Finding Freedom in the World, but, you know.
Oh, I mean, that's good. That's good, too. But in terms of like sales and numbers and volume and conversation space, like that'll be it. So all I could do was add a little piece of myself to it and give it a go. And ultimately, it worked out, because I never thought I was actually going to be a digital marketer. I didn't even think I would have a job in traditional advertising. I thought, you know, for a time it was like, if I can't go into policy work, working as a staffer on the Hill, maybe I can get a job in radio. But let me tell you, radio is protective as hell. Getting into that, yeah, I don't know how people do it, but it was just like, I had every barrier put in front of me. I had a lot of barriers put in by folks that wanted me to get into radio because I was in podcasting. Radio was really trying to keep out podcasters. And now it's like every radio show has a podcast because now they have to now. So, you know, when I started podcasting, I called it, you know, I said it was like in phases. First, it was like, what's a podcast? And then it was like, you listen to a podcast. That's like, I have a podcast. And then it was like, can you listen to all these other dozen podcasts with me? So now everyone and their grandma knows what it is. So, you know, I wasn't like a pioneer in that, but I certainly, you know, caught the wave as it was coming in as at its highest point. And that's where I was able to, you know, to build a lot of credibility in that. So, I mean, it was a situation where everything was pushing me towards digital marketing. And quite honestly, I didn't start calling myself a digital marketer per se until 2020, because I saw myself as a copywriter. Then I saw myself as just a social media guy. It wasn't until I had to start teaching and learning and start applying and working in all these different disciplines of marketing and advertising that I eventually was like, oh, somehow overnight I became, you know, a very highly favored digital marketer among certain circles. And it was one of those things where it was like, you know, now I need to actually try and build out this brand I have of being the young digital marketer that can work in nonprofits, Fortune 500s, tech startups, you know, the political sphere, who can create content as well as push content and then turn that audience into a revenue driving source. And, you know, it's just, it's been wild because, you know, at first I had to explain to my parents what a digital marketer was for about a year and a half. And now when my parents explain to their friends that I'm a digital marketer, they're like, oh, he knows what he's doing then. Not many people do that, but the people that do do well. And, you know, it was a lot of me having to pretend I knew what I was doing while I was trying to figure it out. And ultimately things worked out, but I took the wildest path to the most, like, you know, traditional field for a lot of people who are like in the comm space or the marketing space or business space if they went that way in school. Like, I'm doing things that a lot of people I know who went to school for this, they never even got into it. And if they did, they didn't get to carve the path they did. I took an accelerated course in all of this by betting on myself, and I succeeded.
Well, it's funny. So we were talking podcasting there for a minute, and you want to talk about missed opportunities, Remzo. We were going through a couple of years ago, cleaning out my filing cabinet at the house, and we're going through all my old college papers. And I have a paper in 2006 that I wrote for one of my media classes entitled Podcasting, the Way of the Future. And I don't think I thought about podcasting again until, oh, I don't know, 2014, when I started listening to them. But good Lord, if I'd got in on that podcasting ground floor back in 2006, just think about a game changer that could have been.
Oh my gosh. I had the idea for something like Anchor.fm in 2015. Because my brother, Ryan, who produces a TV show that we were on called The Witching Hour, he was my producer for my first podcast at the time when we were in college. And I remember him saying, you know, what if we could create like an AI or something that's very basic, but what it does is it shoots your RSS feed to all podcast networks. And as we get more listed on our site, it also adds to them automatically as well. And it wasn't until about 2 years later that Anchor.fm came out, and that did it. And what that forced everyone else to do, you know, Spreaker, Spotify, Podbean, whatever, is it forced them to start offering, you know, this free service listing to Apple and everything else that you basically need to run a podcast. So I remember looking at that and I'm like, look how much money we left on the table.
That's ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to, say, self-publishing, how important is the marketing side of it? It's like you kind of published before you really collected all those skills. Are there things, I guess, maybe that you would do differently today than you did back then?
Well, I have to tell people when I bring on clients who want to write a book, whether traditional or self-publishing, and I make no claims that self-publishing is better than traditional publishing. If I ended up writing a third book right now, I would go traditional. But what I say is that what you need to decide is what's best for you, because there is no obvious path. And the two biggest things that are going to, I think, dictate your opinion as to which way you want to go is time and money. Are you rich in time or are you rich in money? Usually people have to pick one or the other. I was rich in time for both books. I was not rich in money. Now I'm more rich in, now it's vice versa. So it's different. But you know, I had to figure out really fast that if you do not promote a book, it's no different than just having a diary. There are people, and I say this for all things, there are people out there. Well, let me step back. There are three types of people in the world. The people that love you and will endorse you no matter what. They will support you no matter what. That's kind of like a small pool of people that are really into you like that. Then you have a wider pool of people that would like you if they knew about you. They would want your stuff if they knew about your stuff. And then you have people that just don't fucking like you. Nothing you could do could ever appease them. They will just not fucking like you. So what I had to figure out was, how do I find the people that want my stuff without me, you know, having to really convince them? And from there, you know, I was in a good position because I had already built, you know, a large social media presence across the last couple of years before the book was published. I was already known in some circles as a political commentator. I was a blogger and a columnist for a bunch of different places. So it's not like I was coming in from ground zero. And what was also really helpful was that apart from my social media, I had my podcast running at the time, so I could also promote my stuff through there. But then it became more challenging because I was like, you know, what are my big limitations? My big limitations are reach and network. Because if you don't know who to talk to, if you don't know how to get in front of somebody else's audience, you're going to struggle. And if you don't, you know, extend yourself in areas that you might be a little uncomfortable, you're going to miss those people that want to buy your stuff. They just don't know about it. So quickly, I had to learn about, you know, like direct ad placements on websites. You know, the first time I had to negotiate for a banner ad was with Cassie Dillon's website, Lone Conservative. And I had a side banner running there for several years. I got a lot of conversions out of that because that also met part of that target audience, which was young male conservatives that were in the millennial age demographic that suddenly saw my stuff there. They were like, oh, this is funny or whatever. And they went ahead and bought it. So quickly I had to learn, like, you know, no one else is going to negotiate for me. Like, how much do I really want to push this? What do I want to get out of it? And what am I expecting for a return? The other thing was I had to admit, like, you know, if I want to get in front of a lot of people, I got to get with the people that are already in front of them. Hiring a PR person was essential to me, you know, getting featured in the Daily Wire, getting on the Amazon bestsellers list. You know, I was on Stacey Washington's show. You know, I had to, you know, do a lot of my own pushing for that. But at the same time, it's like, if I did not hire this person to make the introductions and to help promote me, there were a lot of folks that say they might like me now, but they would have had nothing to do with me prior. So it was a mix of, I was in a good position because I was already creating content, but I was also just really nervous because there was so much that had to be done. But you learn very quickly when you're self-publishing, it's all you. And I would even say, to an extent, if you go the traditional route, you're still going to have to promote your stuff. Here's an example. I was applying for a job at a media outlet in DC. And at the time, Stay Away From Libertarians was consistently getting 5 stars on Amazon. It was still doing good sales-wise. I was still going on the media junket at that point. It was doing pretty well. And I used that book to really get my foot in the door. And I think that's one reason why. And I had applied for a job as a reporter with them previously, and they wanted nothing to do with me. A year later, after the book came out, they're like, let's talk. So one of the editor's friends had a book that was published through Regnery, had a opening chapter endorsement by Governor Jeb Bush, and was already going to be in all these stores. Well, here's the difference between me and him. My book was a bestseller. His never was. He got one radio appearance. I had a dozen within my first month. His book had yet to make a profit within its first year. I made a profit off of my book within the first 6 months. You know, people were still buying my book consistently for the next 24 months. His kind of fell off within the first year. And I was constantly pushing my stuff even after I had stopped working with my agent, just because there's a life cycle for that. How long do you want to keep paying somebody to promote your stuff when you could just start doing it yourself? I was still promoting it, and he just kind of gave up. So whether you self-publish or you traditionally publish or not, if you're not promoting your book, nobody loves it enough to do it for you. And even if you're a massive celebrity, you know, the first thing your publisher is looking at as soon as the first couple checks start kind of dwindling after, you know, a good couple months is what's the next book going to be? And then they drop you for the next shiny thing. So, you know, whether you want to traditionally publish or self-publish, the big question is how much work do you want to do? Because you could either do it all yourself or you could do some of it yourself. But at the end of the day, the only person that's going to market your book authentically and effectively is you. And if you fail to do that, I mean, you know, good job writing it, but you should make some money back. You should get something residual out of it, whether it's other opportunities, you know, or you just use it as a stepping stone for something.
It's definitely a fad at this point to publish your own book, just so you have that extra thing sitting on the desk with your name on it as you talk to other people about stuff. You know, selfpublishing.com's obviously got a big kick that they're pushing right now with Chandler Bolt. And I can tell you a number of people that are out there just helping people produce books. Like, hey, you're a subject expert of some kind. There's no way that you're not a subject expert on anything. So just write the book that you're subject expert on. Well, they never tell you about is, like I said, the everything after that. Hey, you made a book, but if you weren't spending the 6 months at least at the end of that writing period starting to work on the promotion for when that thing actually releases, to start getting people interested, like you should have spent 6 months advertising. You should have spent 6 months making connections so that, like, when that day comes, you have that email list at the very least to send people out to. And there's a million people that'll help you write a book. There's far fewer people that will help you sell your book. It's like, hey, great, you got this thing, and it's a big paperweight unless you do that.
Exactly.
The hard, you know, advertising part of it at the end. So. That's why I started this, and what I'm trying to do is try and help people to bridge that gap. Like, great, you got a book. Now let's go find your people and get them to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, every book tends to have like a life cycle. You know, both my books sell really well in election years. So, you know, come 2024, I'm going to sell books without really having to do anything for. Now my books kind of sell themselves. I don't actively promote it as much because now I'm promoting other products and services that actually make me more money that I'm more actively working in. Sometimes you have to just put some things aside.
Well, you titled your books well for sales during later eras too, though.
Oh, yeah. I thought, because this is around the time where I started to really understand the power of SEO. For years, I had really underestimated that. And now it's even harder to find natural organic reach online anywhere. But I mean, you know, stay away from the libertarians, you know, that libertarians and then the quick action item, stay away from. I mean, that's something that, you know, people will be Googling when they're asking questions about political philosophy. And then, you know, I love my second book title because it's like how to succeed in politics. That's a very generic term. And then, you know, and other forms of devil worship.
I didn't even care what that book's about. Like, I'd order that thinking it's a how-to book.
Yeah, like it was just so funny. And I mean, in election years, both those books just sell really well. So I don't have to push it as much. But I mean, I think the one thing that I think I wish a lot more authors would understand is that, you know, this idea that you're going to publish a book like The Martian, like Andy Weir did, and it's just going to organically go from like the self-published book to like you're going to get found by this massive studio. Matt Damon's going to take on your book into a movie. Don't think of yourselves really as just a one-time authors. I think you should think of yourselves as content creators. You know, start thinking about the other book. Get a series out of it. Start a podcast out of it. Start doing blogging. I mean, people want to buy into something that, you know, is going to deliver them more satisfaction long term. Now, some people might see that as either a benefit or a detriment. You know, we've got, you know, every movie is getting a sequel, reboot, continuation, Disney Plus series. And it's for a reason. It's that people want to keep the fun going.
I keep hearing it more and more. So I'm working on writing a book on it myself, but it's the word relationship. Marketing is relationship. It's all about building relationships with people. And the reason you build those relationships is because what's one of the first things they teach you in sales? Who's your best customer? Someone who's already bought from you, as long as your product is good. And so maintaining that person being a person who's already bought from you keeps you having good customers in the future. Part of this podcast, the reason the whole Iron Age media thing came about was because you have the big companies like Disney and Marvel that failed to do that. They, you know, taken over by radical political factions that think, oh, well, franchises are franchises and we'll have these people forever. But that's not the way it works. Those franchises existed because people maintained relationships with their customer base for a long period of time, and they kept those people happy. But if you don't take care of those people, then what have you got?
Yeah, I'll say that one of the most difficult marketing experiences I had was at the nonprofit that I was working at, because I had kind of like a twofold challenge for the year I was there before I decided I need to move on and get back into the private sector. One was that I had to build their marketing. I had to basically build up their whole marketing department from nothing. I mean, they had nothing, and it was really bad. When you looked at their competition, I mean, they were just light years behind. So first, what I had to do was I had to create the infrastructure, get the technology, get the funding I needed. And, you know, from there, once I had all that set up the automation, and then set up a content calendar, and then figure it out from there. That was hard. That took me like 4 months to build up, because I'm trying to also convince these people that my ideas are good, because, you know, they'll hire a marketer because they need marketing, but they get nervous when you start asking for things. And then when you start doing things, they expect an immediate return. And they expect everything you do to be up to that standard. So that was like the first 4 months. That was really difficult, because
explaining to someone that, hey, it's going to take 6 months before SEO does anything for your website is not something I want to hear.
You know, the president of that organization did not know what Google was. Well, he knew what Google was, but he didn't understand how Google worked or anything. Like, he actually did not understand what Google was, other than just calling it a search engine. I'm like, it's not just this magic machine you plug stuff into. Google is a lot of different things that you can use to get what you want. And he just refused to listen to me. And here I am in front of a room full of coworkers having to explain to this man what Google is. And he says, well, I don't care what you say it is. Here's what I want it to do. And I'm like, this is not going to work. And, yeah. You know, it was just one of those moments where I'm like, this man does not know what Google is. Like, what the hell? So, I mean, it was that. But the hard thing that came after that was, now you have everything you need to succeed. But if you don't have content, and I would go months without new content. It was really nasty. I can create all the promo graphics and, you know, I can create a few pieces of content here and there. But if I'm going like weeks without like fresh content, it gets really hard to recycle things. And then the last thing you want to do is recycle your competitors' things. You don't want to do that. But that was really fucking difficult. And, you know, it came down to the point where it's like, okay, now we're really starting to build an audience. Now people are starting to understand our brand and what makes us different. The thing that they had a hard time doing, which then makes it difficult for me as the marketer to go ahead and relay that to their audience, is what's the value proposition? How are people benefiting by supporting your work? And if you can't answer that, that's not good. Because at the end of the day, everything that you do online should be, and in business relationships, is we see an immediate problem you have that's causing you great frustration, and it's interfering if you're ability to be productive and other things. How can I give you the immediate solution to solve that problem, hopefully permanently? And they couldn't answer that. So by the time that I was leaving, it was very much at a point where it's like, listen, I can only take you so far, but I cannot carry you to the top of the Himalayas. You actually have to put in some work, because you could have everything you need. You can have every tool and bell and whistle under the sky. But if you're not doing anything with it, and if you refuse to learn what you need to do it, the marketer can't solve everything. And that's when you need to understand, tell your clients, it's like, listen, I can only take you so far. You've got to work it from here. And that's what I think a lot of people get frustrated about when they're dealing with their marketers. They're like, I need you to constantly deliver all these things that I want. But at the end of the day, it's like, no, the marketer is taking the finished product and finding the best way to communicate it to people. If he or she does not have the product, it doesn't matter what your intentions are. They don't have what they need to do their job. And I think a lot of people want the marketer to do the content and do all that stuff. And, you know, I do content marketing where I have to actually create the product. That's fine, because that's part of my job. That's what I have to do. That's part of the arrangement. But for a lot of like small business clients and stuff like that, you know, they don't want to do that. They're just like, well, just do what you did last time. And it's like, well, last time involved some degree of collaboration. You know, I had political clients who hated being on camera. And it's like, well, I can't just show people the same photo of you a dozen times. You're going to look like Chairman Mao. And, you know, I know that you don't like going on the radio, but one, you kind of need to do it because your opponent is. Secondly, I need sound bites for the next ad. You gotta give me something to work with. And that's, you know, that's one difficult thing. So going back to authors, it's like, you gotta keep it going. You gotta keep that relationship going. You know, I love Chuck Palahniuk's Substack. Chip Zdarsky, my favorite comic book writer right now, also has a Substack. It's basic. Could they be doing something else? Yeah. But at least they're giving us something.
It's like with the idea, why are you supposed to have an email, you know, an email list? Because it's what keeps you in people's minds and that time between you actually doing something. Yeah. Even if it's a little, hey, how's it going? You want to keep your name fresh because it's, you're in the world of content marketing. It's so easy to be forgotten so quickly now because your brains are bombarded with so damn much.
Oh, yeah.
I know personally, if there's something I'm genuinely interested in, I have to go out of my way to stay in touch with it just to make sure I don't, like, miss out on something because I know I will forget about it if I just don't put the effort in.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I get to do right now is I've taken on the role of the social media and marketing guy for my jiu-jitsu academy that I attend. And I love doing that because it helps them, you know, get more clients and build up their reputation. But it's also, you know, it's letting me keep a lot of my talents. Like I don't do a lot with film. So this gives me a lot of opportunity to do that. It lets me do a lot of video editing. So it's keeping my skills up in like a real way, but it's also allowing me to continue to create a portfolio because if you've got items in your portfolio that are like 5-6 years old, I mean, that stuff gets dated. Like I've had to throw out a lot of great things I've done because it's just old stuff. Things have changed. People want to see what you're currently doing. So it helps me build up that portfolio. And, you know, what they did when they approached me was they identified that the fact that they need somebody who can tell them what to do and tell them what needs to be done. And they will allow me to do whatever I need to do as long as it benefits them. And that was just a very upfront, you know, part of the relationship. And since then we've been doing extremely well. And, you know, the results are there and they know that if Remzo wants you to, you know, do something twice in front of the camera, you're going to do it. Or, you know, if I show up at a random time to start filming, don't question it. Obviously I need content. And what's great about filming is, you know, it typically takes me an hour to secure enough footage so that way I have a good 2-minute promo reel. And from there, I've got an hour of, you know, separate footage that I can stretch into fresh content for a year if I wanted to. So, you know, it's just about finding ways to get creative with it.
Well, I'll ask you the same kind of question that I ask everyone. If you had one piece of advice for anyone who's planning on going this route and trying to sell themselves, what would that piece of advice be? You know,
don't be afraid to just start. And I think for a lot of people, you know, they might have a talent, but they're afraid to start because they're afraid of how much they're going to ask for it. They're afraid of, you know, what if this customer doesn't like what I have to deal with, or what if my first product isn't great? Like anything, it's going to suck when you start, but the best marketers I know are the people that are constantly creating, the people that are constantly educating themselves, and the people that aren't afraid to just try new things. Because, you know, I'm not an expert filmmaker, but I've done a lot of really great things with film. I'm not like the best person in the podcasting space, but I've done enough podcasts so that I have a lot of accolades. I've done over like 4,000 hours of audio since 2016. I've produced around 6 shows, a lot of them that have been in the top 100 for iTunes. You know, my TV series, you know, is it the best documentary series ever? No, but it's won like half a dozen film festival awards and stuff like that. Half the time, it's just about getting in the game because you don't know what you're good at until you try it. And in terms of marketing, you know, we live in a globalized economy. We live in an era where so many people, they could do a lot of the stuff themselves, but they don't have the time to do it. They may even have the money to do it, but they just don't have the time. I took advantage of a lot of that during in 2020 because I had a lot of small business clients from across the world who just needed me to take care of basic things. And I was able to charge a higher premium for that. And I was able to go ahead and use that to build up my portfolio and things worked out. And, you know, it's just that education is so easily available right now. Like, you know, I tell a lot of people, it's like, if you want to become a, you know, a basic like entry level marketer right now, you can get all the education you need through HubSpot or from the e-marketing institute or from LinkedIn. Like, it is so freaking easy right now. There is no excuse. And ultimately, it just comes down to doing it, because you've got to build that portfolio. You know, last year when I was like, I'm done with the nonprofit sector, I got to get back into the private sector. Yeah, I had a lot of stuff that I could show people. But what I was also figuring out is that a lot of other people also have a lot of cool stuff, and that I got to get some credentials. So, you know, I had to go ahead and re-up my own certifications. You know, I had to go ahead and put a new portfolio together of not just good stuff I've done from the past, but recent examples, because people don't care about what you did 5 years ago. They want to hear what you did within the last couple of years. And they want to see the results from that. They want the links. They want the stats. You know your numbers. You know, that's a big thing. So, you know, the only thing stopping somebody from becoming an entry-level marketer right now and building really fast is their ability to just get a little uncomfortable and then move at your own pace. Because, you know, I think I did a lot of things backwards. It was a lot of on-the-job training. And then over the past 2 years, it was, okay, now I actually have to, like, you know, show people through some, you know, basic generic courses that I actually have the competency to, you know what I'm talking about, which is why when somebody tells me that I don't know what Google is, and I'm like, okay, well, you just admit you have no clue what it is, but you're disagreeing with what I and a majority of the population know it is, I should probably not work with you anymore.
Yeah, that's going to be a headache.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, I mean, it's all out there. You just have to go ahead and do it. You're going to mess up here and there. But at the end of the day, everything compounds and it's so quick. I mean, I would start billing yourself on Fiverr right now. Pick a few talents, do copywriting. Okay, I can write sales flyers. I could do articles, graphic design. Okay, I can work Canva. You know, you want to have a consulting call? Well, you know, let me work with a few small businesses and I can charge like $30 an hour and, you know, do it that way. I mean, it's so easy. Like, I'm not saying that the work is easy, but what I'm saying is that to get into this field, it has never been easier.
Well, thank you so much for your wealth of information there, Remzo. Hopefully the people today are going to be able to take it and utilize it very well. So,
well, I hope they do, because, you know, we have so many great things out there. And, you know, I'll never be like the best author, the best this, the best that. But to a small community of people that really respect me, I've been able to bring a lot of change, a lot of positivity into their lives personally and professionally. And for that, I feel like $1 million. And I mean, at the end of the day, that's all we can really hope we can deliver to people.
Absolutely. Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.